Thank you for listening to this episode of Courtside Indiana Podcast. Please hit the subscribe or add button on your podcast app to get them delivered straight to your phone, tablet, or desktop. As always, we'd appreciate a rating and review, and you can reach us directly on our Courtside Indiana Twitter at CourtsideIND. Welcome to episode 117 of Courtside Indiana Podcast. I'm Jim Reamer, joined with Zach Tyler and Chris Spillman. Guys, how are you doing today?
Good.
Great.
One word. Well, Zach threw in two words, great, twice. So
twice, yeah.
That's quality audio. This is what, we're post-sectional. So sectional finals were yesterday. So we've got some winners. We've got some disappointment, at least on Chris and my part. Our teams didn't make it this week, but we're going to do our normal rigmarole and talk about some good basketball that we all saw. And there's an off chance that Nick Baumgart might roll in here. We'll see.
What, way off chance?
Well, yeah. I mean, in fairness, he is an hour behind, and with this being our regular recording time, we're not really delaying much for him. So poor guy. It's 7:45 a.m. where he is right now. So recording here on a Sunday morning. But anyway, but right now Zach's going to get us updated on recruiting. We didn't do anything last week, so we've got a couple weeks worth to get caught up on. And right. And I think we're going to touch on this tech situation that happened literally like it. What, Tuesday night? Games were already being played. And we got breaking news that, like, I forget when Kyle Neddenrip posted that story, but it was probably like 10:30. It was after we did our Twitter space. I enjoyed the Twitter space, by the way. Chris, obviously, you was part of that as well. But you being an hour behind Friday night, Zach.
Oh, yeah.
Because you went to Portage, and then our game times didn't mesh last night. By the time I got anywhere where I could, or by the time I was anywhere to do that, it just wasn't feasible. So we'll be able to do something this week, I think, as we move in between games at the regionals. So, but Zach, why don't you get us updated on recruiting? We'll talk about some of that stuff, and then we'll move into our best games and best teams and stuff.
Yeah. Let's see. Aaron Humphrey from Tinley, got a Mount Aloysius offer. That's a D3. Sean Page from Anderson got a Central State offer, a D2. Ashton Johnson from Fort Wayne Southside got a St. Francis offer. Let's see. I'm missing. Aiden Lambert also got a St. Francis offer. He's from Snyder. Jackson Gold from Warsaw 2023, St. Francis offer as well. And then you'll have to help me with the name again. Wesley
Chilichowski,
thank you, from Floyd Central, picked up an offer from Bethel. And then our commitment we had was Grant Brown from Snyder, committed to Wabash.
And now my OCD leads me to want to know why we have two St. Francis's spelled two different ways. So hold on a second. I'm literally going to check that as we're talking. The one I liked was, I mean, not that I – oh, wait. Well, there's St. Francis in Chicago.
Yep.
So was that the right one?
Nope, that was the wrong one on my part.
So he got offers. So I wondered about that. So he got offered by St. Francis
in Fort Wayne. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
That makes sense. That's, I remember him posting that on social media. So I just wanted to make sure we didn't overlook something. Oh, no, that was Lambert did too. So St. Francis basically has three offers: Ashton Johnson, Aiden Lambert, both those seniors, Jackson Gould, who's a junior from Warsaw. The one I liked was, not that I didn't like those, but the one that was interesting for me is Sean Page from Anderson. Big kid, strong kid, and I think he will be he could be interesting. He would be a kid that, if he could figure out a way to get re-recruited, like with a prep school or JUCO or whatever, but now I guess with the transfer portal, it doesn't matter. You can go somewhere and transfer once and not have to sit. But Page to me seems like, if he gets in a situation where he just completely works on his game, mean, he is a big, strong kid, and he plays pretty hard. He and Jaquez Ingram were the two huge reasons why they beat Greenfield Tuesday night. Not that they weren't favored, but those two guys battered Greenfield on the boards, on the offensive glass, and really, really pleased with Page's motor. He's got some lateral limitations. Like he's probably a drop guy in ball screen coverage, but he's a big boy. And I think he's got pretty good hands and pretty good touch, and think if he could just really improve his body a little bit, that he would be, he might be a little bit more of a commodity than what he has been. I think not too many people know much about him right now, but he's a nice player. Neither one of you guys have seen him. Chris, have you seen
him? Great.
I saw him. I watched their game against Anderson, and he looked pretty big, and he was definitely making an impact around the rim.
You mean against Mount Vernon or?
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, okay. Mount
Vernon. I don't know if you meant the sectional game or something else. So yeah. He's nice. I saw him play in the fall. He was good. He played in our fall league. So it was a good view of him. I had not seen him before. At least I don't think I had. I think he and Amir Carson are both new to them since last season. There's a chance that Page was there last year, but couldn't play. Can't remember how that was explained to me, but Ashton Johnson, is that a good level for him, Zach?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's got the IU East offer. Big, he's a stockier guard. I mean, he can play both guard spots probably.
He shoots it well enough.
Good size. Ball. I think he does shoot it well enough. Yeah, he handles it well. Great motor for him too. I think level will be good for him.
It would have been good to have somebody on who got a chance to watch their game last night versus Homestead.
I watched the part of the end of that game. Yeah. And he looked pretty good. I watched the last 5 minutes or so, and there wasn't a lot of scoring in the last 5 minutes, but he had a few tough buckets near the end and rebounded well and had almost hit a 3/4 score shot to tie it, but was in and out. So,
yeah. I guess that's the one good thing about staying at home is you get to live stream. You get to watch a bunch of streams. I guess we could have too with, I don't know how good the Wi-Fi was where you were, Zach, but I don't know if I could have live streamed some other games just to keep an eye on them or not, but I'm not sure how much my attention span would have been divided last night with the game I was watching. So, Chelichowski, I we've talked about this before. I thought he committed to Marion a long time ago, and I was wrong a long time ago. I think he's going to be interesting. He didn't play a ton of minutes as a junior, but then was really good in the summer. I thought he was really effective and a big, strong body and a good rim protector. And again, he is definitely attached to the paint. So
he's 6'10", is that right?
Yeah. I mean, he's a big kid. And okay. I think he's really developed a lot lately. And I think he's got a chance to be, I mean, you look at what he's done the last year, just in terms of development, I think he could be he could definitely be, I mean, a factor in the Crossroads League. I mean,
yeah. Size comes at a premium and
Size league is a for premium sure. at all level. So
yeah.
Kind of riffing before we hit record that Sean Page would have been a good candidate to maybe be a prep school kid and play another year of summer. But I don't know what he's going to do with now that he's got a good Division II offer. So the weird thing was, so we do all this recording for our sectional stuff. We had 4 hours of podcast basically. And then we get through the first night of games. And then about what, 10:30, 10:45, Kyle Neddenrip breaks that Damon Turner at Tech was going to be suspended for, I guess, effectively the remainder of the season. There was no timetable to it, but can't imagine that it was going to be overturned anytime this week. And probably not overturned anytime soon. So he was basically done. He didn't get a chance to coach in the tournament. You guys have any feel for this? Any thoughts on it?
I just told you I was surprised it took so long because I felt like that was kind of apparent earlier, not this late.
Yeah, timing was a little weird, I guess.
And there is some, there has been some talk behind the scenes that they waited on purpose so that way there couldn't be an appeal, so that there couldn't be any way to not let him coach. I don't know if that's legitimate or not. The IHSA will certainly deny that if that is the case. And you know, there'd be no way of proving it unless somebody has some sort of written correspondence. But you know, the one thing, when all this stuff came out, actually in the fall, in October, when Ned and Rip did the article about him, about them, you know, we talked a little bit about this past link rule and the way it's intertwined with, it's bylaw 20. It's in bylaw 20, by the way, which bylaw 20 deals with undue influence. The way it's intertwined with the bylaw 19, which is the transfer bylaws, is I felt like at the time the interpretation was, and the reason I felt like the IHSA had all the information they needed. The fact that they had new information, I guess this is where I'm going with this. The fact that they claim to have new information leading up to this decision is mind blowing. Everyone knew those two guys played for Damon. Everyone, we're talking about Reggie Bass and Rashid Jones. Everyone knew those guys played for him for multiple years. I would guess back to sixth or seventh grade. So this is not new information. So the way I was interpreting it at the time was that bylaw 19 stood on its own. That, you know, basically transfers are only an issue if they go from a state associated school to another state associated school. So we talked about this, that if you're moving from, let's say, obviously school to school in Indiana, you've got certain rules you've got to live by. If you transfer in from a normal high school out of state, like Ohio or Illinois, for example, you've got their rules to worry about. And each state has proven that they will honor the other state's rules on how they handle this stuff. You know, and you had a lot of kids last year from Illinois who transferred over to Indiana to play. And I'm sure there were some exceptions made, but you can bet that there was some discussion between the Illinois Athletic Association and the Indiana Athletic Association or High School Athletic Association. So my understanding was that bylaw 19 stood on its own. And if you didn't violate any transfer rules in bylaw 19, then bylaw 20 wouldn't be an issue. The bylaw 20 would only be an issue if there was, if it was school to school, like intrastate transfers, like coming from a prep school to me meant that these kids were beyond the 365 day window of playing for, you know, an Indiana high school team or, you know, another high school team, because prep schools are beyond the scope of any transfer rules. Basically, I mean, the IHSA couldn't give two craps about what a prep school thinks, especially an unaffiliated prep school.
Right.
So the timing on it sucks. The fact that there's new information just seems silly. It tells me that the people that are making these decisions, especially on the basketball side, really have no feel for the game beyond what happens at school ball, which I think is, I think, that should change. I think the person who's in charge of high school basketball should, at the IHSA, should be out watching games in the summer. You know, he should be if nothing else, go to the Charlie Hughes Invitational at Carmel and Hamilton Southeastern. You know, if nothing else, go to a Butler team camp or go to, you know, if you don't want to travel in June because it disrupts your vacation, you know, or your time. You know, just pick a couple of isolated events. It's not hard to find good events in central Indiana, which is where a lot of these guys do live, especially in the executive committee. It's not hard to find good events where you are and see some of the top players. I guess if I was in charge of the IHSA basketball, especially basketball, I'd want to know who the top players in the sport were, but that's just me. But anyway, anybody have any other thoughts on that?
No, just bad, like you're saying, bad timing. People not, I mean, yeah, just, it's just super weird.
Yeah, it was weird. It's too bad.
It doesn't make sense. It is too bad because it hurts the kids too.
I don't know how much the outcome would have changed. I mean, Chris, you've watched Tech a lot. They basically live and die by how well they're shooting the ball. I don't know who's coaching the team is. I don't know if who's coaching the team is going to change some of that.
Yeah.
I mean, there might be some valid sentiment toward the notion of this as things are going south, Damon may be able to calm the troops down a little bit more easily than whomever coached. But, I agree with Zach. I think the timing kind of sucked. But at the same time, the ITSA's rationale of new information is just, it's kind of mind blowing because there was absolutely no, we could have told him that back in June when they were playing with him. So, all right, well, moving on. Best game, doing our weekly stuff. Best game, best team, best player performance of the week. We'll start with Chris since he's not a regular. Chris, what was the best game you saw? And it includes streaming too. So what was the best game you saw?
Yeah, well, I would for the games I watched fully, I would say probably Lawrence North and Warren Central, just because that was a really competitive game. And it included what I would say is the best performance I saw, which was CJ Gunn against Warren Central as well when he had 26 in the first 13 minutes. But that game, just both teams were playing really well. And it was really close until the end. Ellen started pulling away, but Gunn really, really impressed by him in that game. Because the thing that was, I haven't seen him too much before, but he was really hitting threes and he just kept shooting from this one spot, which was like that tick on the side court. He just kept shooting from that area on the wing and he just kept making it. And Warren just couldn't guard it really. And he kept hitting tough. And this goes the whole weekend. He kept hitting tough pull up mid range shots too. And he was hard to guard the whole weekend. And Lawrence North just had just played a little bit more under control than Warren, and that's kind of what got them the win.
Ellen's got more. They have more shot makers overall than what Warren does. I mean, Warren was able to settle their backcourt. Beginning of the year, they really were struggling. They were able to settle their backcourt, but they weren't really consistent scoring threats. We're talking about Deontay Davis obviously doing a lot of it as well. I'm talking about their other guards, the guys that we would traditionally view as guards. Where, you know, LN's got Kobe Bowles and Mac Brown and guys that played well against Chris Posadics Tuesday night. So, Zach, what was your best game?
Best game was last night, Marion John Glenn, 1 versus 2 and 3A.
We had a lot of rematches last night. A
lot of rematches last night. Yeah. It'd be interesting to see how many teams won the rematch as opposed to the regular season game. But in this case, Marion won this game. John Glenn won the regular season game. It was back and forth most of the game. I mean, Marion had a good lead around the second quarter into the third quarter. Glenn had a good lead at the beginning of the game in the first quarter into the second quarter. But I feel like Marion's schedule, the regular season schedule, they play some tough teams. Glenn doesn't really go do that. I think that might have helped him in this case. We kind of talk about guys' team scheduling up. I looked into that a little more here. I mean, we see you guys were able to see Marion play Cathedral, play Westfield. Mm-hmm. They play Southside, and John Glenn just doesn't do that. So I'd like to think that helps in this case, but
I mean, I certainly think it does. Now, the conference that John Glenn is in is a good conference, so it's not like they play an easy schedule by any stretch of the imagination.
Right, because they're in the same conference as Marion.
Right, and it's a 10-team conference, right? Or is it a 12-team conference?
I think it's 10.
10?
I have to look.
They, so they do have a good schedule. But, yeah, I mean, I value teams that play difficult schedules. I mean, you look
it's at – It's 12.
I thought it was bigger. You look at all the schools around Central Indiana and how they just beat up on each other. Very rarely are you going to have. That's what made Fishers is 21-2 pretty impressive, because they play a pretty decent non-conference schedule and they're in a really good conference. So, you know, we had to consider them, you know, legitimate, even though, you know, their best piece was their best player, their best talent was a freshman, you know, and Simmons was having a really good year. He struggles when there's just a ton where he struggles when he's just in the low post. I don't want to get too far down that tangent because that was earlier. That was Tuesday night, but yeah, I think scheduling up really helps. And it, look, it's something you can do when you feel like you have a really quality team, you know, and
right.
When Brooks and Kakalia graduate, and if they don't have the pieces to replace them, I would imagine they could eliminate Westfield and eliminate Cathedral and find two decent teams in their area and still have a good schedule.
Right.
So, but my best game, every game I saw this week was double digits except for one. That was last night, Carmel versus Westfield. Obviously the team I'm rooting for there, I don't ever have any shame in admitting that I'm biased toward Carmel. I thought that Westfield, to me, it comes down to, I mean, as good as Braden Smith is, and of course, a lot of this is his vision and his creation. As good as Braden Smith is, it was Alex Romack that he had a lot of nails in that coffin last night. Every time Braden got in trouble, Romack was around, and every time Braden found him, and almost every time Romack converted. The funny thing was the first one, Braden was like, I don't know, it seemed like he was 4 feet away and threw a fastball at Romack's head. And I thought, well, I felt bad for Alex because I don't think the moment was too big for him. I just think that thing was coming off pretty hot. And I thought, but, you know, we could use more of that. We could use some more turnovers. But, you know, the problem was, and I even put this in the tweet, was Romack was wide open. First play of the game, basically. The first possession of the game for Westfield. And they got the play that I've been worried about since June. I mean, I've been foreshadowing this since June that Romack, since the Charlie Hughes, that Romack was going to be the X factor for them. And not just against Carmel, but certainly against Carmel, because Carmel's length has bothered Braden. You know, when Braden gets the paint, now this year he did finish better at the rim, and he was wonderful last night. But there's still times where he gets in trouble, and because he has to create stuff, and there's been times where that trouble has led to extra deflections. Even if it's Carmel deflecting it out of bounds, it still gives Carmel a chance to reset their defense. You know, but last night, every time he was deep in penetration, Romack was there, and those two guys worked so well in tandem. Hafner had a good game. You know, really, it was outstanding that Carmel came back. I mean, they were down by as many as 13. The first possession of the second half, Smith hits a three. It's the biggest lead of the game, 13 points, and Carmel comes roaring back. And then the one switch they made at halftime was they put Garway Duall on the Smith, and that changed the dynamic of the game. And he picked up his third foul, and Osborne moved him away from him and went back to whack. And now all of a sudden, Braden had an opportunity to Wack is a really good defender, but he's, you know, he doesn't really bother Braden's vision. You know, Duall can bother his vision, and Duall can get up and vertically and contest shots that Wack can't.
Right.
Wack's defensive acumen is going to be position, not really letting Braden get to where he wants to go, although that's a little tougher to do this year than it has been in the past. I mean, obviously he's better. But Duall was really effective on him, and he was pretty effective on him during the regular season game. But then when they took him off of him, that gave Braden the extra vertical space that he needed to make plays, and then that's when they sort of grabbed control of the game. And I don't know. I was kind of hoping that at some point they would go back to him, but then Garway picked up a cheap fourth foul, diving on the ground for a loose ball. Thought it was a bad call. He did not dive on top of the guy. He did make contact with the guy, but it wasn't like he dove on top of him. You know, and, you know, that picked up his fourth foul. And I think at that point, Osborne made the decision he was not going to put Duall on Braden because he figured Duall being in the game was more important than Duall guarding Smith. And I certainly I certainly don't question it beyond what would it have looked like for maybe a couple of possessions late in the game. That would have been the only thing. But you know, again, I'm sitting up there on my laptop, calm as can be, not in the heat of the battle, trying to make those decisions in real time with assistants telling you one thing and talking to officials, you're talking to coaches. But man, I thought Carmel had control that game, and Braden just snatched it back. And he was brilliant. And Romack was good, and Hafner was good. Hafner had an 8-0 run on his own at one point. That when Carmel had their, was that their biggest lead, was 3 points? I think it was their biggest lead was 3 points. And then Hafner went on a personal 8-0 run, and next thing you know, Westfield was ahead by 8 or ahead by 5, and that was it. They never looked back. The game was never really – Carmel did have a ball down 3 with a chance to tie it and couldn't get their shots to go down. You know, they had one possession late where they had 6 shots at the rim, right at the rim, couldn't get any of it to go down. Orem got fouled and then only hit 1 free throw. They were down 2, and then they were down 4 after that. And then it was at that point, it was just – they just were chasing something they weren't going to catch. So, great game. Proud of Carmel. Proud of how they fought. They didn't fold. Pete Suter had a hell of a career. I think it's something that I'm, you know, I wish, you know, you kind of wish he could go out and be undefeated in sectionals at least. But he was in line to be 4 years without losing a state tournament game. And that kind of ended last night. So great career for Pete. Was glad to see Charlie Williams have a really good second half. And Josh Wack did all the things he could. I know I'm taking now time to just talk about Carmel seniors, but yeah, kudos to Westfield. They were brilliant last night, and Braden was everything that I thought he was. So, best team, Chris.
I would have to go with Cathedral. I was really impressed with how consistent they played after the first game, though. In North Central game, that was a little bit of like a game of runs kind of, but the Tech game and then the LN game, I was just impressed. It seemed like just they have so much depth, and each game they didn't really have a guy that led them. Like, it wasn't a guy that you could say after the game clearly was the reason they won. It was just everyone was making shots. Everyone was doing things. And Xavier Booker, he had 2 really good games, Friday and Saturday, especially Friday. He kind of led them to the win because they were trailing going into the fourth against Tech. And then he went in and was just kept going around the basket, and they had some great passes to him. Comer played well, and I'd say definitely Cathedral.
Good. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to, I don't know where I'm going this weekend. I think I'm still going to go to Logansport. Can't go wrong watching Westfield play and get to see Kokomo play with Peckinpah coaching. But plan B would be Indianapolis for sure. So, Zach, best team?
I'm going to have to stick with 26-0, Chesterton Trojans.
Yeah.
They just keep rolling. They keep finding ways to win, battling through adversity. Didn't have to play Valpo this time. Maryville still gave him a tough battle. Travis Grayson obviously did his thing, carried him last night again against Portage. But they got other guys that step up every night, either pair with one of the Parrish brothers, Chris Mullen, Sims plays well, Guest plays well. I mean, they're the total package, I feel like. And they just keep rolling.
Undefeated.
Expect to see them in the regionals championship Saturday night.
I want to check something real quick before I say this. Yeah, there's still 2 undefeated teams left because Monroe Central won. I hadn't really looked at all the sectional scores last night. I knew the 4A ones, and I knew some of the ones that impacted kids I coached. Just a little side note here. A Bloomington team won every game in the Martinsville sectional.
Nice.
Every single game was a Bloomington team that won. Bloomington North and South each won on Tuesday. They each won on Friday. And then, of course, Bloomington North beat South last night, 32-28 in overtime.
Oh,
people be complaining about Carmel games. 32-28 in overtime. My team, best team of the week is Westfield. I don't see any the way they played. If nothing else, the way they demolished Fishers, the way they, I mean, they kind of did the HSC what we thought they would. I mean, HSC is young, and they're most talented kids. Although Ref's going to be really good for Stevenson's going to be good for them next year as a senior, but they've got some decently talented sophomores that I think you know, they're going to make some noise. So, but yeah, not much more to say about Westfield than what I already said. I mean, they were really strong, like I said, against Fishers and HSC. I thought the play of Romac was hugely impactful all week. And I think you look at what Hafner did against Fishers, where he didn't really score. I think he only had 5 points against Fishers. Unless I missed a basket late, he didn't score much against them. And he came out firing a little bit early against HSC with a little bit more of a mindset off the ball of being moving more with purpose. And then he obviously, like I said earlier, he made some plays last night. So my team of the week pretty simply is Westfield. So Chris, your player of the week, your best player performance, you going with Gunn?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Gunn. Although, just because that was the main one I was watching, if Braden Smith gets a honorable mention for me, though, because he was incredible. But Gunn, that Warren Central first half, the first 13 minutes, was just – I haven't really seen much like that. He just really took over the game. And they were only up by one at halftime, despite him having 26 in that half. So that was – interesting, but he was just hitting threes, hitting everything he threw at the rim, and he's really athletic. He's just a good guard, really good guard. So, yeah.
Zach, who's your best, your player performance?
I'm going to go to a different game than in anything I've talked about already. I'm going to go to senior guard Drew Adzia from Crown Point. This kid's a kid that needs to be picked up by D3, if not a lower level NAIA. 27 points on Portage, knocking down threes, hitting his free throws, getting other guys involved. Such a hard-nosed point guard, great floor leader, just had a heck of a game, and it was tough to see him lose just because I kind of know who he is and his family. But Drew Adzia, senior guard at Crown Point.
I mean, my best player is pretty simple. It's just Braden Smith. I mean, he was, you know, the way he played all week, the way he's played all year, he's probably still not 100% healthy. I don't think it bothered him last night, although there was a possession midway through the fourth quarter where he was down. He was probably just cramping a little bit, but he just was spectacular, and he's fun to watch. As an IU fan, I'm disappointed that Archie Miller, of all people, a small guard who succeeded in a high major conference, never even considered him. You know, he had two assistants in his ear telling him that you need to recruit this kid, you need to go after him, and he just never would. And, you know, I don't know that he still wouldn't have ended up at Purdue, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's tough for Indiana. You look at how they're struggling with guys who can shoot. You know, Butler would have been a good get for Butler. It's going to be a great get for Purdue. It's going to be a great get for them. And he was spectacular this week. So he lived up to it. So any Chris, we also do promising prospects, any young, typically they're freshmen or they're sophomores that didn't perform at the varsity level as freshmen. So they're first year sophomores or freshmen. Anybody that you saw this week?
I'll say two actually. So the first one, okay. Javon Guess from Warren Central. He looked really, really solid in their game against LN. He rebounded really well, and he was really active in getting the ball and was being aggressive and confident, and he looked really good. And he's got a really big frame too. He's like 6'5", 6'6", and has a pretty bulky frame too. And then I did, I watched just a little bit of this game, but Franklin, Micah Davis, he sort of doesn't technically fit since he played, you know, varsity for homeschool last year, but he led his team to a sectional championship over Center Grove and had a lot of good performances this week. And he, I was really impressed with him last summer, and he's, I mean, pretty impressive to lead them to sectional title. And that was pretty impressive for Franklin overall too. So
that's a sectional where the team that's favored to win rarely wins it. I think there were a couple of years where Center Grove did win it with Trace Jackson Davis. But other than that, it seems like the team that's supposed to win just doesn't. And I think that would have been Whiteland. And they got beat. They didn't even get to the championship game. So, Zach, you have any promising prospects?
Yeah. They're Wellman twins at Portage are freshmen. They start for them. Great bodies on them so far. They're gonna be really good. And then somebody I saw Tuesday night at Elkhart was Marion Dye from Elkhart, 6'3" kid. He plays football, freshman for them, just starting to get some varsity minutes, and he's got a good frame on him as well. And he was bodying them up in the post and played hard against Concord. So he'll be good in the future. I want to give an honorable mention also. If Chris is giving honorable mentions for guys, I want to give out a shout out to Marcus Burton from Penn as well.
Yeah.
Marcus Burton averaged 29 points in the three games of his sectionals at Elkhart. Just heck of a player, heck of a floor leader as well. And handles the pressure really well. It'll be good to see. Hopefully get to see them play Chesterton Saturday night at Michigan City.
Penn's going to be – I mean, they'll be one of the top teams next year for sure. So they've got a good group of juniors. Shocking.
Yep.
Everybody has juniors, it seems like. We've talked a lot about Jalen Harrelson. I thought the way he played in the second half, especially against Westfield, was impressive. I mean, he was really the one guy that could get anything. I love how smart he is without the basketball. He doesn't just stand around and watch. He's a participant. He cuts with purpose. But I think the guy there, that's my sort of backdoor honorable mention guy. The guy that I wanted to talk about was Braylon Mullins at Greenfield, 6'4" freshman. Their second leading scorer. I think he's their second leading scorer. If not, he's definitely the third. And it's the second and third guys are right around 11 points a game. But their second leading scorer, he's thin right now. That's his thing. He's thin. As he starts to fill out more, he's going to be a really good shot maker. And I think with him and Dylan Moles next year, I mean, if they could figure out some way, you know, if they can figure out, I mean, they got bullied on the glass. They could figure out some way to counteract that. Those two guys together are going to be a pretty good duo, a backcourt duo for Greenfield. But I would look for Mullins next year to take a big leap statistically, because he will get stronger. He probably will continue to grow another inch or so. So he'll be a 6'5", 6'6" wing, and he's going to be a kid. He doesn't fear the moment. He's willing to step into big shots, you know, and I like that he's competitive. Even if he's missing shots, he doesn't let it impact the other end of the court. And he'll get better defensively too with strength. I mean, he's got a lot of size and length. His dad played at IUPUI, was a Greenfield grad, played back with him and John Hamilton. So, anyway, that's my young player. So any surprises, any surprises this week?
Go ahead, Chris, you go.
I was going to say, I watched a little bit of the Terre Haute North sectional, and I was impressed with Terre Haute North beating both the sort of indie schools in the sectional with Brownsburg and Avon. And they don't really have any like guys from watching that they pop off the page a ton, but they just have a really tough team that plays well, and they have a lot of shooters, and that's kind of what got them the win against Brownsburg. It was close, and then they hit three or four threes in a row, and Brownsburg wasn't scoring. I don't know how they'll match up against Cathedral, but that was definitely a nice win for them to win their sectional. So, yeah.
Zach, what was your surprise? I know there's surprises. I just, it's picking which one.
Just a couple up here. I mean, Valpo obviously losing in their first game to Maryville was a pretty big deal, because everybody was assuming that was going to be a rematch with them in Chesterton Friday night. Another one would have been Lake Station. I get, maybe that just that sectional in general, like Ileana Christian losing their first game to Andrean and then Lake Station not ending up not coming out of there after after that, you know what I mean, with Willie Miller and the, another good junior like we've been talking about, but
right,
those would be the two I think were more surprising.
I thought we felt like Ileana Christian had played a pretty decent schedule, right?
Yeah,
I
mean, definitely.
They weren't playing a bunch of chump change up there. I mean, but again, Andrean usually plays a pretty loaded schedule for what they, you know, for I guess effectively a 2A school. It was been a down year for them, but they're usually a team a lot like Lafayette Central Catholic, who did they win their sectional?
No,
LCC, they didn't. They got beat.
Yeah.
No, they won their sectional.
Did they win it? Oh, I'm thinking of Lafayette Jeff. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Lafayette Catholic, Central Catholic beat North Vermillion by 39. You know, a lot like LCC, you just with Andrean, you just who cares what their record is? You just kind of always figure they're going to be at least among the favorites. But
right. So that means a losing record team goes to regionals through there, Knoll, and then another maybe surprise. We kind of talked about we all thought Harrison was going to be Kokomo just because of guard play, but that obviously wasn't the case.
Yeah, guard experience. Yeah,
right.
I mean, that's Kokomo's point guard's a freshman and I think that, you know, you look at the Lucas brothers, they're both good defenders. Ben Henderson is a really good defender. The Lucases have a lot of length, and Ben Henderson's 6'3", 6'4". Yep. You know, there's just a lot of size there on three guys who can really guard. And I was, I don't think I was surprised. I think I was, I'm going to double check here, but I think I was surprised at the point spread of that game against Harrison, that it got to be 22 points.
Yeah.
I wasn't surprised Kokomo won, but it was certainly, I picked Harrison to win the sectional. So, I mean, I got that one wrong, but at the same time, I was surprised that it was that, you know, there's a lot of games this week, especially the games I saw where I wasn't surprised necessarily the team who won, but just surprised at how the point spread difference was. So, I think my biggest surprise of the week, although I'm sure they would argue, is Lutheran beating Tinley. Again, you look at what Tinley, their schedule-wise, what they play and how tested they were going into that situation, how they were tested going in that sectional, was pretty surprised and that Lutheran was able to get them. And it was looking, you know, we talked an awful lot about hoping to get that Tinley 21st century matchup in the state finals, which also means that Tinley had to beat, you know, probably North Davies along the way or whoever won that sectional, which happened to be North Davies, but couldn't, you know, you definitely, it wasn't a certainty that they would get to the finals, but I certainly thought they would get past the sectionals. So, and the other one was Yorktown. Yorktown, we're going to have a sub 500 team in the regionals at 3A level too, as Yorktown comes through. They beat Jay County last night. They had the easiest draw of that group. They had Delta, who's having kind of a down year, Muncie Burris, who's just kind of, you know, Muncie Burris. And then they had to play Jay County. Jay County had to go through Newcastle and Hamilton Heights. And then again, Yorktown beats them by 19. You know, just utterly shocked. And I know Yorktown's got some quality guards. They got some kids that can score. Maybe there's an injury situation that impacted their record this year. That now they're healthy. I mean, they were 10-14 this year with at one point a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 game losing streak. And they lost their final two games of the year, including the Mount Vernon by 44 points. So this was not a resume that screamed the team was going to come through the sectional. I mean, they've got some bad losses in terms of point spreads. And they do play a good schedule. I mean, they're in a good conference, but yeah, those two were definitely surprises for me. And I mean, I think that, I mean, obviously we have other things like little knickknack ones like Connersville and, you know, stuff like that. Connersville, not only did Connersville not win the sectional, but Greensburg didn't win the sectional, but those, you know, they had four really good teams in that sectional. So, or four teams that had really good seasons. So yeah, those were two surprises, I thought. So Well, anybody got anything else before we get to our reads?
I don't think so. I was going to ask about Yorktown. I knew I was going to ask about their regular season, if that was a surprise that they got through there in the end as with a sub 500 record and how they match up against Northwood. But
I mean, they've got a couple of sophomore guards that are good. They've got junior guard AJ Dunn, who's terrific. I mean, they've got some guys who can score. They've got some guys who can shoot. So I guess if they can come in, and I think anytime you've got good shooters, you got a shooter's chance, you know, like you've got a puncher's chance if you want to play out a metaphor, but I mean, they just had a bad year. I don't know if they had injuries this year or what, but it, you know, they came through when it mattered, and they're moving on. So Zach, you got your,
yeah,
go for it.
Yeah, Box Out Sports is the leading online graphic solution, giving you the ability to create professional content in seconds to highlight your team and student athletes this season. Sign up for a free demo at boxoutsports.com. That can be used in high school too. Remember, you can use it for about any sports team, not just basketball.
Guys, thank you for listening to the Courtside Indiana podcast. If you listen every week, we appreciate it. If not, what do we say now, Zach? What are you doing?
What are you doing?
What are you doing? We've stolen it from Nick. What are you doing? Hit the subscribe or add button on your podcast app and get them delivered straight to your phone, tablet, or desktop. And as always, we'd appreciate a rating and a review, especially a 5-star rating. Thank you. And you can reach us directly on our Courtside Indiana Twitter and Instagram accounts, although we're not super active on Instagram, but you can definitely reach us there if you want to send messages to Courtside Indy or Courtside IND. That's Courtside IND on both Twitter and Instagram. Chris, are you going to be able to get the games this weekend?
Yeah, for sure. Yep. Where I don't know. We'll see. I'm not undecided right now, but I'll take a look and let you know. So.
All right. Well, if you want to go to Southport, we can get you in there. So we'll set up a credential. Zach, where are you headed this week?
It's going to be tough. I mean, they're probably Michigan City at night, depending on who wins that one, or it might be nice to go to North Judson and see Blackhawk Central Noble in that championship if that ends up being that route.
Yeah, that's the thing. With Carmel out now, I can think more about, do I want to go someplace in the morning and then go somewhere else at night? And I think that
I'll definitely be doing that, bouncing around.
I wonder where the –
depending on matchups.
Get my usual 5-hour stint at BW3 in Logansport.
Jeez.
They may not get my money this year. I don't know. I mean, Homestead Westfield's pretty juicy. I'm guessing I'm going to end up at Logansport in the morning. And then where I end up at night, I think, depends on matchups. I wouldn't mind watching Tipton versus Carroll. There's some other things I wouldn't mind watching. I don't think I'm going to do something crazy like go up to Logansport and then end up like deep south, southern Indiana somewhere. Yeah, I've got some options in the evening, but yeah, there's no way I'm missing the Homestead Westfield game. So anyway, well, guys, I appreciate it. Zach, as always, Chris, thanks for coming on, and everybody else, thanks for listening.